This is Poured Over, a show about stories presented by the booksellers of Barnes & Noble.
I'm Jenna Siri, a bookseller and associate producer of Poured Over, and today I am so excited to be talking to Lottie Hazel, who is a writer, a scholar, a game designer. There's a lot of things going on, but her debut novel, Piglet, is something very special. When I first saw this book, I was immediately enticed and drawn in by the title, by the jacket, by the vibes that it was giving me. But I don't think I could have really been fully prepared for what I was going to find once I started. So I can't wait to talk about this book because I haven't been able to stop thinking about it since I read it. But I was hoping that you could set up the novel for us a little bit and give us an intro into Piglet.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me, Jenna. I'm just thrilled to be here and talking with you. So I describe Piglet as a story of appetite and aspiration, and it follows Piglet in the few weeks before her wedding and a couple of days before she's due to marry her fiancé, Kit. He reveals this terrible truth to her, and the book follows her as her life starts to crumble and this very carefully curated persona that she's made for herself and for Kit is really compromised by the information that he shared with her. And a lot of this crumbling is seen through the lens of food, which Piglet finds to be integral to herself.
As I started reading this, first of all, I was floored immediately just by the character of Piglet, by her voice, by the clarity and also murkiness of her navigating the world around her. She has these moments where she is so sure of things that she is doing, and then so many moments where I think as readers, we're all like, oh no, what is happening? But I think her voice is so strong, and I was ready to follow her through anything as soon as we started. So I wonder, when you were writing this, was her voice something that came to you first, or was it the book at large that sort of cropped up?
That's such an interesting reading of her, because I think she is an authoritative person in that I think she's aware of what she thinks is right, whether that is the case, you know, morally or socially or whatever is a different case, I suppose. But no, she didn't reveal herself immediately to me. The first scene that I wrote of this book is the night after Piglet confesses, not Piglet, Kit confesses, Piglet makes a carbonara for them both. And I didn't know who they were, what their names were, or what had happened between them. But I was really fascinated by this character who was inhabiting a sense of dogged domesticity and who would continue making the carbonara no matter what had happened, no matter how, you know, rapidly their life was crumbling. And that just fascinated me, the commitment to grocery shopping and the commitment to the daily ritual of a meal and what had happened there between them. And I wanted to get to know what that was. So yes, I didn't know who they were to begin with.
I think that it's always so interesting when I hear people say, oh, you know, this scene came to me out of, you know, out of the blue and I had to write it. And I think that those scenes of that carefully curated domesticity, those moments of sort of shutting out everything else and just focusing in on the food, on the preparation, describing all these things, that is so specific. I'd never really encountered anything quite like it in writing, because I think so often when we think of these action scenes or these scenes where we're really like propelling the plot forward, you know, you're thinking of character interactions or some sort of, you know, high tension action. But
yes,
do all those same feelings.
Also, I feel like for me, I feel like dinner is a place of high action, even if we're completely without dialogue. You know, the way, you know, the pepper is shoved across the table or the fact that someone's not plated up a bowl or whatever it is. I feel like there's so, like, it's such a rich format, I think, the meal. But I know what you mean about not expecting so much to happen in the unfolding of what's for breakfast, what's for dinner.
I'm famously a terrible cook. I mean, maybe not terrible, but I'm not interested. I'm not invested. And so having those scenes sort of play out where I can imagine the care and the commitment to making these things, it's really compelling to read. And especially the way you describe food, which is all at once this gorgeous, luscious, you know, carefully created description, but at the same time, there's something underlying, a sort of, you know, unsettling piece, because as we move forward, we're experiencing things crumbling. I was describing it to people as, you know, when you picture a really lush jungle and the top layer is really green, but there's a little bit of rot sort of seeping underneath.
Yes.
That's how I was feeling as I was reading these food scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was writing, I always had in mind a kind of, you know, like a Renaissance or a Baroque kind of feast that looks astonishing. And then you edge closer and it's starting to molder and be, I think that's a great synonym for Piglet as an entire book. Like, it's about perception and actually what's going on when you get closer and have a look.
And I think her character too is so interesting as a window into all of this, because on the surface, as we meet her, she is in many ways a very likable character. And I hate to use that phrase in general because I think it has such a connotation, especially when it comes to women. But, you know, she's set up, she's experiencing success in her career. She's marrying this man from, you know, a high class. And, you know, she's just bought this house. She's having her friends over. And yet you're waiting for that shoe to drop. And I think in some ways she is too.
Yes. Yeah. I so get you in terms of that kind of uncomfortableness with the term likable. And I just think it's fascinating that you're completely right that when we meet her, she has a very kind of probably a likable, she has all the kind of traits and things she collected to make her a likable character. But I think that's interesting when we progress in the plot and she becomes maybe unlikable. Like, what is it about her that's unlikable besides some of her decision making? Like, is it about a woman with an appetite being jarring or unfamiliar? And I just find that whole, the way a reader can come to the text and assess Piglet in terms of her, if we like her or not, an interesting conversation.
Yeah, I think too, setting her up in that way right at the beginning, where we get this glimpse of maybe what her life has been and what her life could be and what she thinks she wants it to be. And then as things unfold, to sort of go along with her, you really like locked in with her from those the first moments where you're like, well, I just have to see how this is all going to play out.
Yeah.
I think too, I wonder about this sort of aspirational piece that you have, you know, about women who have desires, women who have ambitions, women who have hungers for something, even if it is not tangible or not, you know, easily explained or easily gained, we still face, you know, this sort of fear of what it is to be a woman with ambition.
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely part, a big part of my thinking when writing Piglet, is kind of ambition and appetite and how much is allowed and how much of Piglet is in the moments where she's failing or she feels that she's failing. Is that a woman made small by convention and expectation, or are these things that she's actually tried to grasp and then has been unsuccessful? And I think so often it's the former, and it's the expectation of the self and of the woman being like, that's enough, that's all you can have.
And I think especially when it comes to sort of the other people in her life, there are several people who are, you know, saying, this is what you should want. And this is the scope with which you're allowed to want.
Yes. Yeah. The scope of want, I think, is like, is crucial to be, I think, especially for her family, where there's a kind of a class difference. The aspiration, I think, is unimaginable for certain members of her family to think, well, how could you want something different to this when you kind of maxed out the scope, as you put it.
And I think that sort of sense of aspiration versus obligation is very interesting when it comes to her family and like to her sister, to Kit and to his family. There's this sense of, well, we've laid this out for you. Why would you want something different than this?
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think there's, she's obligated to herself and to her aspirations that she had at, you know, the beginning of the novel. I think that feel there's that sense of, well, I've worked so hard to be on this path, and so do I now stay on it? Because to veer off would be a waste in some way.
And I think so often, I mean, I know it happens so often for women. I'm sure it happens to people of all, you know, all genders, all experiences, that idea that when you realize what you want might be bigger than you could have ever imagined, there's that fear too of, if I step, you know, off this path, what's waiting on the other side? And I think she's experiencing that. And I think so often we don't represent that well in literature and things, because it is something that is not easy to capture.
Yeah. Yes. And that word path, so important, because it is about, I think Piglet, a lot of her decisions that are hard for her here are about doing something that deviates from a path that's been laid out for her, not only by expectation, but by, you know, convention.
And so many of those scenes in which she is, I mean, I'm dancing around some of the like things that I don't, because there's so some reveals, but these scenes where her hunger metaphorically, literally takes her are some of the most incredible things, because it's like, that's something I should not feel so ready to connect with. And then you're like, oh, of course, I know exactly how that feels.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think it's an interesting experience. Like, I was enjoying it as I was editing, as the reader, to be, feel a kinship with her, but also a level of, I was also repelled in some of those scenes as well. So it's an interesting kind of two dynamics to be rubbing against each other.
Especially in the terms of, as I'm reading, wondering how reliable of a narrator Dear Piglet is. You know, there's these scenes that feel so heightened and so like, this can't possibly be happening like this. And yet the responses from everyone else and all those little pieces trickling around her, like from a waitress in a restaurant or a very stressful wedding photographer, that character sticks in my mind so aggressively for some reason. Yeah. But, you know, all these pieces together, it's like, is this really happening like I think it's happening?
Yeah. I think the photographer is a particularly great character to highlight, because I think it's that thing of being observed. And I think the wedding photographer is just a mad profession to be in anyway. Like, you must see some stuff. But I think it's interesting for especially Piglet, who's so concerned with how she's perceived, to have someone there professionally capturing and documenting and archiving her life. Yeah, it was an interesting one to play with.
I mean, you have so many characters that they might serve like a dimensional purpose in a grand scheme of things, but you give them so much. Like Kit's mother, I think, is such an interesting character, because she could very easily be very flat and sort of to serve just to be that voice for Piglet, but there is so much more to her, and I was so surprised to see how much Piglet really cares for these people in a lot of ways, because I think it'd be very easy for her to write so much of it off, but she's really connected in a lot of ways to the people around her.
Yeah, that was important for me. I think when I'm writing, I always want to be depicting something that feels truthful. And I think that it would be easy, like you say, to make some of the supporting characters two-dimensional, and we kind of get why they're highlighting class differences, you know, whatever their role is in the text. But I think it's really important that those relationships seem like they're grounded in a reality. And I think the reality is, you would try and like your mother-in-law, you would try and like, and if you gravitated towards these people, there would be a sense of respect and love for them. And I think that is more interesting than flattening those characters, to try and give them a sense of that we understand them in some way, even if we don't agree with them.
I think it allows us to not really dislike anyone in the book. I think there's so many moments where I'm like, I probably should dislike these characters, but I couldn't really justify it at any point. Maybe Kit a little, but even then you're still like, well, I don't know.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm pleased, because I think that I didn't want to make anyone villainous, because I think it's much more interesting when there are redeemable qualities, because when you're failed by, when Piglet is failed by people and fails people, I think that's a more interesting read. Well, I hope it is, that, you know, they're not just completely terrible all the time.
I think especially with Piglet's relationship with her friend Margot, there's something so special between the two of them that really grounds the book in a way to keep returning to that, even when everything else feels very heightened and crazy and chaotic. That sort of undercurrent really brings things together.
Yeah, I think of Margot and their relationship as almost like Piglet's backbone in a way. Like it keeps her very present. And I think that the way their relationship unfolds over the book, it's not a relationship of contractual obligation. There's no property or marriage there. Like she's not born into it like she's with her family. I think the relationships that we choose to have and that Piglet and Margot are choosing to have with one another, I think of their own kind of special.
I really enjoyed the character of Margot as we were going through because, you know, in some ways she is that only voice of being like, what are you doing to Piglet? Which I think we all have like someone in our lives where they're, and we are often that person, I think, to someone else too, where you have to have someone who's just going to be like, no, you can't do that. Even if you're still going to do it and it doesn't, you know, change the shape of your relationship too much. But I think it's interesting too to have that moment where people's lives start to diverge when you've got people getting married and having children, that you're hitting these sort of different beats and you might be hitting them at different times than the people in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I was interested in looking at that particular dynamic of Margot going somewhere that Piglet couldn't yet follow and what that means for their relationship and how she thinks about not only Piglet and Margot and their kind of direct correspondence, but also how that impacts the rest of Piglet's relationships, how it makes her think differently about Kit and whatever's happened with them and how that factors in the kind of ripple effect.
And I think it's interesting to wonder, you know, I think the normal sort of expected path or, you know, life plan is like you get your job, you get married, you buy a house, you have kids, and she's doing all those things. And the other people around her are sort of doing them in certain ways, but she is just so unsure. And like, I thought it was very interesting that even though she has all these hungers, she's not looking for a specific thing. We don't know, this is what she wants instead of this.
Yeah.
It's sort of that nebulous, well, but there's just got to be more.
Mm. Yes. That feels like a kind of a truthful way to read Piglet and her desire. And I also think that feels representative of someone that feels like they're hungering for something else. It's so rarely a tangible, okay, once I've got that, then I will be happy. And if it is, it's unlikely that once that thing happens, that hunger is sated. But I'm fascinated by that cyclical satisfaction cycle of a craving building, satiation, and then we're looping back around again to something is building. Like there's never a stasis there.
I think that reminds me a lot of Piglet's journey sort of with her wedding cake and this sort of need, this idea that she thinks if she can create this incredibly difficult cake, that like somehow things will all work. And I think that we've all had that moment of like, if I can just make this piece work, all the other pieces have to just follow. And some of those scenes are like the most harrowing in a way that I was like, I think I had to pause while I was reading to be like, maybe I'll just take a breath here.
Yeah, I didn't expect so many people to tell me that those scenes made them sweaty. I was like, never has there been a higher compliment than perspiration.
Yeah, I mean, truly, because those moments, the way you're able to create tension in something that is, you know, on face value should not be as terrifying, though we've all watched, like, I think like cooking shows or like baking shows where you realize that, like, truly baking is one of the most stressful things you can do. But in those moments, I was like, oh, I get it. I feel it. Mm. And that's why I will never bake anything.
Ever.
I was like trying to imagine how I would even have the like forethought to do some of the food endeavors that she sets up for herself. And I'm like, no, I just couldn't.
So wild. I like to say in a kind of like very tongue-in-cheek way that I method wrote the book because I cooked all the things in the book alongside Piglet to try and get a sense of her and to get a sense of the experience. But the passage that we're kind of relating to some of her struggles of my own. just falling apart.
Interesting. I think that but we also need to hear about, you know, like if everything she cooked went perfectly 100% of the time, I would be like, that's not true. That's never true, especially in those kinds of things. I think you could substitute so many, like, I don't know, creative endeavors. I think it is interesting that there's this creative aspect to her too, that it seems like doesn't get quite recognized amongst those around her, that like, maybe she's not writing, maybe she's not painting, doing something that's like traditionally seen as creative, but she has this expansiveness to the way she thinks and these ideas. Like when she's so concerned about how her parents will feel coming to dinner at their home, that she creates this like tablescape situation to make them feel more comfortable. And yet it is incredibly lavish, but to look not lavish. I just think like the way that she understands all of this is so incredible.
That is such a generous reading for Piglet. You'd be a good Piglet friend. But also I think you're so right, and I wonder whether that, because I hadn't really appreciated that being a skill of hers, whether that's underplayed because it is a domestic, it's a domestic skill that has no tangible value in a kind of capitalist patriarchal system, where it's like you can put on a nice spread, good for you, but also look at all the money I've made, or you know, whatever it is.
I think too, in relation with her job, where she is maybe trying to bridge these two worlds with like some degree of success. I think obviously there's ups and downs, but it seems like she's like, I guess this is what I have to do in order to monetize my passion, which I think is something people try to do so much now.
Yeah.
I wonder too, the way you've structured this book is very interesting. There's and I think something that lends to the tension building, there's sort of a countdown in the beginning where we're headed through to the wedding, to this big moment. But the rest is sort of structured very interestingly to get us through, like time is played with in this novel.
Yeah. Yes. That was a really deliberate choice, partly to incite tension and sweat. And then also to kind of simulate the feeling that Piglets might be having, like at that moment when things had been derailed for her, how time might move in huge gulps and then be very sluggish and slow. She might be feeling existential, like there's the structure evolves in the book. And at the point of evolution, I think there's almost like an out-of-body experience for her going on, and we kind of change from a very rapid feeling countdown to something that feels more like we're watching a car crash happening.
And it is not a long book. There, you cram a lot in for us in the best way, like in a way that makes me feel like every piece is exactly where it should be and everything kind of falls in the right spot. And as I was reading through, I was like getting closer and closer and closer, and things were building. And I'm like, there's not that many pages left. How are we going to get some? Where are we going to go?
Yeah, just to the cliff edge.
I was like, oh no. Well, you know, you have those moments when you're reading where you're like, is this book going to give me what I need? And I think there's a lot of literature out now. I think a lot of people are coming to books for a sense of escapism, a sense of, you know, to remove themselves. And I think that's great. And those books often have very neat, tidy endings. But sometimes you're looking for something that's not going to quite give you all those answers. And I think Piglet, she still has secrets even when this all ends.
Yeah. Yes, I'm not very interested in the neat ending. But I am interested in a satisfaction and what is satisfying. And for me, so often that's something that's bittersweet or gritty or it's not fully resolved.
Yeah, I think Piglet finds out, just along with the rest of us, that sometimes where you end up is not at all where you expected or wanted, but maybe it's where you needed to have gone. As I was reading through and coming to sort of those conclusions and going along with her, I was wondering why we don't have more novels that feature food like this. I think it's so interesting that it's, I know that there are plenty of, you know, novels that have food or have these scenes, but it's something so like primal and vital to who we are as people.
Yeah.
And it is also something that, again, especially for women, is so judged and monitored and controlled.
Mm.
But this doesn't feel like, you know, exactly like those novels that are about self-image or connection to food. There's more to it.
Yeah. I wasn't particularly interested in writing a novel about food. It just felt like, for me, food is like a consistent undercurrent of character and just has such vast potential for storytelling that it made sense for me to write Piglet in this way. And I think because she became, once she had taken her seat at the table, as it were, she became such a clear character to me, where a very conscious decision, which I wonder is maybe that's why that feels different. I don't know.
It's a novel where these things are important, and that because they are a part of her and her life, it's not a novel about those things that also features characters on the side. And I think that that is an important distinction as you read, that this is a novel of a story, of a relationship, of the end of something, the beginning of other things, that features these other things, of these foods and these connections.
Yeah.
So I think that it feels much fuller in that way.
Mm. Yes. And I just perceive food to be a language all of its own to play with and to write with.
Did this entire writing experience go as you expected? Were there things that surprised you as you were writing, as you were finishing, revising, all that, since this is your first sort of novel going out into the world?
The initial writing, I think, went as expected because it wasn't a particularly interesting way to write. I turned up and wrote as many words as I could. But the edit was interesting to me because it felt like the book had shed a skin, in that the structure really came together. I really had a sense of what I was going to do with the ending of the book, whereas before I'd been unsure what was going to happen there. So that was interesting, because the way I initially wrote was I was in the driver's seat and I was deciding what was going on with plot. And then when it came to the editing, I very much felt like I wasn't alone. The book was there with me making some decisions for itself.
I think that's always a good sign when it sort of takes on a life of its own. I feel like you can feel a lot when I hear authors describe those things. You can sort of feel how much soul that book has.
Mm-hmm.
Was it at all like, okay, I have to ask about like game design and game developing, because I think it's so interesting and it's not something I come across very often. So I wonder, like, are there any crossovers? Are there any similarities to like creating a board game and creating a novel?
I hadn't even considered them to be connected in my mind. I think that's because I find writing to be very much a heart pursuit, whereas board games I find to be a head pursuit. But someone pointed out to me that Piglet almost feels gamified in the reading. And that was so fascinating to me, to think, yes, actually, I am trying to create experiences that elicit certain reactions. And that's what I'm doing in both modes. So I think they have much more to do with each other than I once thought. But I hadn't consciously made that connection until someone was like, there's quite a lot of similarities going on here.
Sometimes we do need someone else outside to be like, oh, of course, of course.
Yeah.
I think there is so much in the way that you create tension and movement through the novel that feels in a good way of how you would move through a game and move through sort of an experience. Like, you're creating those same road marks and, you know, pit stops and places that they have to be, whether or not we see it as a connection as we're creating.
Yes.
It's all coming from the same place.
Yes. Yeah. I kind of group the work under the umbrella of storytelling. And I think what they have in common there is the importance of light and shade and, you know, topography along the way.
Absolutely. I wonder, too, about your literary influences, about sort of how you came to this book in that general area, or just some literary influences in general.
Oh, so many. Some I think as kind of like direct comparisons and sisters to Piglet would be Laura Williams' Supper Club. I don't know if you've come across that one before, has similar concerns. But generally, books about the domestic I'm fascinated in. So Megan Hunter's The Harpy is a great novel about, it's kind of magical realism and food centered fiction about how to be a mother and create a idyll at home and the stress of that and how that can be consuming. But more recently, I've been so inspired by writers like Ann Patchett. I'm obsessed with Tom Lake and keep trying to push it on everyone so I can discuss it with people.
Absolutely.
Barbara Kingsolver. I've just finished reading Demon Copperhead and now feel bereft at its lack in my life now because I'm like, how has it ended? And I'm just in awe of her ability to tell a story. I think writers that are interested in depicting relationships, I'm always inspired by Elizabeth Strout, but also who are looking to create larger pictures. So Strout and Kingsolver, especially, I'm so impressed and in awe of their ability to create immensely rich worlds that are captivating. So every character is interesting.
I can see sort of those connections, and I can see how loving those things would lead you to this book because the characters are so compelling in Piglet, and you just feel immediately like you're like, well, I'm in this world now. And even though it's not a world that's innately familiar to me in a lot of ways, you know, that I'm like, well, I want to know. And I care, even when I'm like, please don't do that. Please don't do that. I cared so much about what was going to happen to all these people.
Yeah. I love that just internal rhythm of like, don't do it. Don't do it. Just don't do it.
I mean, there were definitely some passages that I had to read a couple of times to be like, is what I am reading really happening? And also to be like, I wish I could skip the next 10 pages because I know what's going to happen and I'm already sweaty about it.
Yes. Yes.
Do you miss any of these characters at all now that you've sort of committed them to the page and they've taken on the life of their own? Do you miss Piglet?
You know what? I don't, because I love talking about it with other people. I love it not being just my own. That's one of my favorite parts of it being a published book now, is to discuss it with other people, because I'm so deliberately sparse about Piglet, especially in terms of her physical appearance, about lots of her history. Like, I don't give huge amounts of exposition. So I love hearing other people's versions of Piglet, like who she is to other people and the other characters. So no, I don't miss her. I'm happy for her to be gallivanting around in the world.
And I feel like she is. There's so much space there for her to be so many things to different readers. And I find that really special when you have a character where I imagine for you two to be like, there's so many versions of her out there that are connecting with people. That's very exciting.
Yeah.
And especially with, I mean, I can show up my very well-loved advanced reader, but I love this jacket. I know in the UK it is donuts.
Yes.
But this package will draw people in, and I feel like they can't help but want to know, like, what is happening. I was floored from when I realized that we were going to be calling her Piglet this entire book. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I love the package too. The moment my editor sent it over, I was like, yeah, that's the one. That's exactly it. I think because it is so, it has, I think, the close cropping of the burger, like the textured treatment and, you know, the luminous mustardy cheese, I think is gorgeous. But then the fact that it's so much in your face and it's giving you so little room to move, I think is just a wonderful, delicious, claustrophobic experience. I think captures the novel so beautifully.
I think claustrophobic is a word that I kept coming up as I was reading, but I was also like, no, but it's a good thing. I promise that it's a good thing, because once I think I read this in one sitting because I couldn't stop once I started. Mm-hmm. I just needed to know. And I think so many of our readers and listeners are going to be so excited to get to meet Piglet and to see all of the things that she is. So, Lottie Hazel, thank you so much for joining us here on Poured Over. Piglet is out now, and I cannot wait for people to get their hands on it.
Oh, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Hello, readers. It's time for another TBR Top Off. We're here to recommend a couple of fantastic books to pick up when you stop in for your copy of Piglet. I'm Mark, coming to you from my Barnes & Noble in Cincinnati, and I am joined by one of my favorite humans in the universe, my book buddy Jamie in Leawood, Kansas. Hello.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I am very well. I'm going to go ahead and jump in partly because I'm really excited for Piglet and I want everybody to read it, but also because I'm excited for the book I want to talk about, which is The Vegetarian by Han King. Oh, God, I love this book. So I was thinking about food and hunger and how primal and ubiquitous those concepts are. And it brought to mind this just tremendous Korean set novel. It initially follows a woman whose unsettling nightmares and invading thoughts lead her to swear off eating meat. Seems pretty simple enough. Not so much. The pressures of womandom in Korea, along with the strict adherence to role and place and control, really just sends our heroine on an ever spiraling path. Her resistance to this control that society and her family and her husband have laid upon her leads her to increasingly unsettling estrangement acts from everything that she knows, particularly her family. And those caught in the ripple effect of her actions are similarly affected. And what starts as a story of a woman who is really charting her own course and doing her best to really own herself as a person becomes this deliciously bizarre tale of boundaries and the shackles of expectation. It is strange and fantastic. It brings to mind folks like Murakami, and just the idea of coupling food and something, again, very primal with something immediate and in your face, and watching that unravel in beautiful ways is just such a great experience. So check out The Vegetarian by Han King. Jamie, what do you have for us?
Well, I think this one kind of falls in with The Vegetarian a little bit, because there have been these, I want to say a score of novels over the last 5 years or so that they have some of these cringe-inducing elements sometimes, and they're just about the messiness that can be women's lives. I think we've talked about that before, and just navigating life relationships at home and at work. And sometimes the entertainment value in the book comes from failing spectacularly. I don't mean, you know, to make it sound like these books are a dime a dozen or anything like that, because I think what makes a book like Eileen or My Year of Rest and Relaxation or Night Bitch kind of stand out in this crowd is that they're authentic, right? We see ourselves in these women. We recognize them. And they are the sort of ultimate, sometimes ridiculous expression of what we're all feeling. So I think that authenticity taken to the extreme and making it entertaining instead of sad is what we're seeing with some of these books. And so I've got a debut novel from a couple years ago that you can read after Piglet, and if you need another messy girl book in your life, and that's Nobody, Somebody, and Anybody by Kelly McClory. This is a tragic comedy, I'm going to call it, wrapped up in an ultra-modern coming-of-age story about a woman named Amy who is working at a yacht club while she waits for her real life as an EMT to begin. Except she keeps failing her EMT exams. More than once, she's failed and she's running out of opportunities. Her mother recently has passed away, so she's really struggling there. And she's often a train wreck who kind of makes terrible decisions and makes things worse, right? She feels increasingly lonely and anxious and decides that she's going to have to fake her way into a confident state of mind and therefore success with a placebo-like trick, right? So she sends herself a congratulatory letter that declares that she's finally passed her EMT exam. And she thinks that this placebo plan is what's going to help her kind of get on track, right? And so from there, we see her taking one step forward, and then, because she is who she is, two steps back as she tries to lay claim to something or anything positive. There's kind of a nice storytelling device that's at work in the book that reveals to you slowly where a lot of these anxieties come from. And so I'm not going to kind of spoil that. But as we learn more about her and learn to root for her and feel for her, we want to give her a hug, but we kind of also want to shake her and tell her to snap out of it. So I think what McClory's created is this really authentic, like I said, messy character for us to love and to shake. She's just very vulnerable, and that is what makes this book resonate. She's a lovely disaster, and thanks to the prose, which is just really hyper-observant and ubiquitous and just plain beautifully put, we're right there with her as she tries and fails and tries again, weirdly. And we empathize with her completely. And the result is a quite tender novel. Even when it makes you cringe, you still feel tenderly toward it. So once again, that one is Nobody, Somebody, Anybody by Kelly McClory.
Fantastic. I am obsessed already. So good pick. Not surprising at all. God, I missed you. But that is all we have for today. Thanks so much for tuning in to Poured Over. Please make sure to give us a rating and subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can also follow us on our socials at Barnes & Noble. Pretty simple. I'm Mark. You can follow my home store at BN Westchester. Jamie, where can we find you?
You can find me at my home store at BN Leewood KS.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Happy reading. Bye.
Bye, Mark.
Thank you for listening. Poured Over is a Barnes & Noble production. To help other readers find us, please rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts.